أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the love of our beloved Prophet and his beloved progeny, please recite a second salawat. اللهم صل على محمد. For the hastening and the return of our beloved 12th Imam, please recite a final and third salawat. The topic that we have chosen to discuss tonight, inshallah, is the topic of receiving and interpreting signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As people, as individuals who believe in the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, sometimes when we come across incidents in our day-to-day lives, we draw meaning from these incidents that happen. Whereas someone who doesn't believe in the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, someone who does not have faith the way that we have faith, may come across the same incidents, may come across the same things, and draw absolutely no meaning from them. When you look, you find that this is even embedded in our cultures. In our cultures, we are taught that there are certain things that our cultures deem or perceive as signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I'm going to mention just a couple of them. Sometimes you go home, you go to sleep, you have a dream, you see something in the dream. You might interpret that as a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sometimes there's someone in your family, they fall ill, they fall sick. You pray for them, you go to the door of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grants your dua, your prayer. You see that as a sign coming from Him. Sometimes your dua is not accepted, it's not granted. That also you might see as a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sometimes you're stuck in a situation, you don't know if you're supposed to go left or you're supposed to go right. Am I supposed to take option A or am I supposed to take option B? I open up the Quran, for example, I do istikhara, I take that as a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala telling me which way I'm supposed to go. So you see that this is a topic that we deal with on a daily basis. This is on one hand, you find it in our cultures. On the other hand, you find it's also deeply rooted and embedded in our religion, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in multiple places in the Quran tells us, قُلْ سِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. Ya Rasulullah, go and tell these people, tell them to travel the earth, tell them to travel to different places. فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الْمُفْسِدِينَ, sometimes he says. Sometimes he says, فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ. Ya Rasulullah, tell them to go and travel so that they can see what happened to those who came before them and rejected our message. These are the signs, the ayat of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. However, what things are considered signs and what things are not considered signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this is a very delicate issue. It takes a little bit extra observation, a little bit extra examination, which we will try to do tonight and in the following nights. Therefore, the questions that we want to answer, allow us to go through the questions, and then inshallah we'll strive to provide answers for these questions. Number one, how do we even define a sign? How is it that we point to something and we say this is a sign, it carries a meaning with it, as opposed to something that may be seen as something random, empty of meaning, hollow? How do we define a sign, number one? Number two, what are the different signs that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends to us? Number three, each one of these signs that He sends to us, what kind of a message is He trying to communicate to us? When something terrible happens in my life, is this a punishment from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Or is it a promotion from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Or can it be both? Number four, what happens if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala continues to show us His greatest signs, but we reject these signs? These four questions, inshallah, are the questions that we will strive tonight and in the following nights to provide answers for. Recite a salawat, please. Let us start from the first question. What makes something a sign? This is a very important point, brothers and sisters. This was one of the misunderstandings that the Quran continuously addresses in its verses. How do you define something as a sign? It's simple. When you're driving down the road, you're in your car, you come across a stop sign. That stop sign is red. It has a particular shape. It's an octagon, apparently. When you see that, it communicates a message to you. You draw a certain meaning from it. Whereas the same time you're driving down this road, you see a light pole, for example, that doesn't communicate any meaning to you. It's not like you see a light pole and something goes off in your mind, you say, oh, I have to slow down or I have to speed up. No, it's something that's not considered a sign. But what is the key here? What makes that a sign and the light pole something that is considered random? The answer is, before you got in the car, before you started the car, before any of this started, there was a point where someone came to you and they made an agreement with you. It was a mutual understanding between you and that individual. In this case, between you and the city that puts up the signs. They made a mutual understanding. They said, listen, from now on, when you come across this sign, this is what it's supposed to mean. When you see this sign, this is what you're supposed to think, not something else. Huh. So this is what makes something a sign. There has to be a mutual understanding, an agreement regarding the meaning, the message that this sign is going to communicate to us. Recite a salawat. Now, why is this important? Maybe I walk in here, I say, for example, here I see 200 people. This means 200 people are going to die tonight. Can we take that as a sign? No, because there's no mutual understanding for it. Anything, therefore, that we are bold enough to claim as a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we also have to have the knowledge to point to where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala made an agreement with us. That this is a sign and this is the particular message that I am trying to communicate to you. This is something that the people of the time of the Prophet did not pay attention to. This is why in the Quran, when you look, you find this concept of tatayyur. Tatayyur coming from the root word of tayr. One of the things that would happen for the time of the Prophet, the guy comes out the house, he sees a specific bird, he takes it that today is going to be a bad day. But there's no mutual understanding between you and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala regarding that thing. So we cannot just point to something and say, this is a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or that is a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. No, you have to show where this mutual understanding is. You have to have the proof in order to point to something and say, this is a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Recite a salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Having understood how we define a sign, let us now move on to the different categories of signs that we seek from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The first category of signs that we seek from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala are signs that we seek to verify our belief system. Many of us, when we became Muslim and we became baligh, we may have looked into the reasoning behind our belief system. Hopefully we have done that. I hope so. I hope that we have done that. But even if you do that still along your life, throughout the days, throughout the months, throughout the years, there always comes times where you start having doubts. When you start having these doubts, you look for signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You seek signs for Him to verify your belief system. Maybe sometimes you're sleeping late at night, everyone is asleep, you're laying in bed, you think to yourself, say, is He really out there? Does He really hear me when I pray to Him? These are some of the doubts that we have. This is the first purpose why we go out and we seek signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The second category of signs have to do with situations where I am trying to attain guidance from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Meaning what? Meaning that I'm stuck with a situation, a decision that I need to make. I don't know if I'm supposed to turn left or right, option A or option B, this job or that job. In this case, again, I go seeking a sign from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I want Him to tell me which way am I supposed to go. In many of these situations, of course, many of us, instead of taking our time, and I'll talk about this, we jump to this concept of istikhara. Istikhara, of course, has its place in Islam. There's no doubt about that. But it's a specific place that it has. You cannot just jump to istikhara whenever you get stuck. No. There are certain things that you have to do before istikhara even comes into the picture. The third category of signs that we seek from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and this is where it gets a little interesting, are the types of signs that we want to see. Where do we stand in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Meaning that on a scale of 1 to 10 in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, how great of an individual am I? Is my iman increasing or is my iman decreasing? Am I a 2, am I a 3, or am I a 6 or a 7? I might think I'm a sheikh, I must be at least a 6 or a 7. So I go looking for signs, I seek signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imagine after the majalis of Muharram are done, you have put so much effort, you have taken part in the majalis, you have mourned Abu Abdullah, you go home, you see a dream, you find there is a person walks up to you and thanks you. For example, you take that as a sign that your iman has increased. This is the third category of signs that we seek from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the fourth and final category of signs that we look for, brothers and sisters, are signs that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala throws into our lives without previous notice. Why? Because these signs are not there to teach us anything that we don't already know. No, we already know. He throws those signs in our lives just to shake up our world, just to have us wake up, just so that we can change the path that we're on. This is the fourth category of signs that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala places in our lives. Recite a salawat, please. Let us start from the first category. The first category was when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends us signs and we are trying to verify our belief system. It's very interesting. When we have doubts, we start looking for these signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, are we supposed to be looking for these signs or not? This type of signs, let's discuss that. When you look in the Quran and in the Quran and the Hadith speak of doubts. Doubt, the doubt that you have that you go looking for these signs. The Quran and the Hadith start speaking about doubt in two totally different ways. Sometimes when you go to the Quran and Hadith will look at you and they say, oh, you have doubts? Well, I'll tell you what to do about that. You have to attain knowledge. You have to learn. Ash-shaku thamaratu al-jahl. Shak is the result of your ignorance. If you attain knowledge, if you learn the knowledge, then shak will make its way out the door. You'll push it out of the door. Okay. This is the first way. For example, in Surah Al-Hajj, verse 5, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, O people, if you have a doubt about the Day of Judgment actually happening or not, إِنَّا خَلَقْنَاكُم مِّن تُرَابٍ ثُمَّ مِّن نُطْفَةٍ ثُمَّ مِّن عَلَقَةٍ. Look at the steps that you took. You were dirt, and then you turned into this fluid, and then you turned into flesh. So what is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doing here? He's taking our doubt, He's replacing it with knowledge. This is the way that we are usually used to talking about doubts. However, when we come to other verses and ahadith of the Qur'an, you find that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks of doubt in a totally different way. And sometimes it's even confusing. In such a way where they say, if you have doubt, you're a bad person. Where we know in Islam that you are supposed to verify your belief system. When you want to choose Islam, you're supposed to verify your belief system. How do you verify your belief system? You doubt it. You doubt it, you go looking for the reasoning, when you find the reasoning, and then you become confident in your belief system, then why is it that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, sometimes He points the doubt, He says, this is a terrible thing you see here. Sometimes Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He is talking about the aqwam, the people of the previous prophets, Thamud and Nuh and those prophets, When he's talking about them, sometimes he says that these people knew the truth, they rejected it, and as a punishment, I put doubt into their hearts. So you see here, this doubt is different. This doubt can coexist with knowledge. You can have knowledge about something and still have doubts about that same thing. So when you look a little closer, you find there are two types of doubts that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is speaking about. There is a doubt that the place of it is in the mind. For that, what do you need to do? You need to gain knowledge, which by the way is something that we seriously lack in our communities, unfortunately. For that's the first one. However, there's a different type of doubt. That's the doubt of the heart. For the doubt of the heart, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you gain. You can be the greatest ustad of all time. For the doubt of the heart, you need action. You have to act upon the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You need to build faith. You can only do that by acting upon the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This second type of doubt, brothers and sisters, which we all deal with, instead of going and looking for more signs from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, instead of sitting in a dark room and waiting for one corner to light up, instead of walking out on the street and expecting someone to speak to us from the skies, that's not what you should be looking for. What we should be looking for is acting upon the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because that's what will make this type of doubt leave our hearts. Recite a salawat, please. This is also why we have hadith upon hadith upon hadith, that sometimes the Ahlul Bayt speak of knowledge in this way. They say knowledge is something that when you gain it, if you don't act upon it, it will leave you. But knowledge doesn't work like that. The way we see knowledge, the knowledge that we learn on an everyday basis, it doesn't work like that. If I learn something, it doesn't leave me the next day, even if I don't do anything about it. If I learn that smoking is bad and I keep up the smoking, that knowledge doesn't leave me. But this is the knowledge of the heart that the Quran and Hadith are talking about. That knowledge, if you don't act upon, it goes. العلم يهتف بالعمل. When you learn something, that knowledge is calling for you to act upon it. If you act upon it, that's fine. وَإِلَّا فَارْتَحَلَ عَنْهُ. If you don't act upon it, that knowledge will leave you. Which knowledge is this? This is the knowledge that we find in the heart. So, to wrap up the first category of signs that we are talking about, when it comes to this first category, I want to verify my belief system. Yes, the first step is to attain knowledge, but knowledge can only take you so far. From that point on, you have to act and work on the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let's move on to the second type of signs that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends us. Recite a salawat, please. The second types of signs that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends us are the type that tell us if we're supposed to go left or we're supposed to go right. We're supposed to take option A or we're supposed to take option B. I mentioned that in these situations, because many of us, unfortunately, we don't want to go through the grueling work of doing research, of consulting not one or two people, 10, 15 people about a certain situation, the first thing that we run to sometimes is istikhara. But when you look at the lifestyle of our ulama, yes, istikhara definitely had a place in their lives. But how often? Was it 9 out of 10 they were going to istikhara? No. They were figuring out what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants from them with their minds, based on the verses of the Qur'an, the teachings of the Qur'an. The problem we have, brothers and sisters, is that we do not even open up this book. Allow me to touch on this a little bit. The problem that we have is that the Qur'an comes into our house, it sits in our shelves, it gathers so much dust that in the words of one of the ulama, you could do tayammum on that dust. That's the problem that we have. This is why in our ahadith, in the words of our ulama even, we have this concept that you have to recite Qur'an every single day 45 minutes, half an hour, I don't have that time, Shaykh. We didn't say 45 minutes, half an hour. You have 10 minutes. You have 15 minutes every single day. There's no doubt about that. This is why we have hadith. The hadith says, if someone, a mu'min, recites 10 verses of the Qur'an on a daily basis, لَمْ يُكْتَبْ مِنَ الْغَافِلِينَ, he's not written amongst those who neglected the presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If he can take this further, he can recite 50 verses of the Qur'an, كُتِبَ مِنَ الذَّاكِرِينَ, he's written amongst those who on a daily basis reminded himself of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You find this idea of reciting Qur'an is so important, brothers and sisters, that not just our ulama are saying this. I will give you an example of an atheist telling us that we need to recite the Qur'an. An atheist. He's not a follower of the Ahlul Bayt. He could care less about the Ahlul Bayt. Amongst the atheists that we have today, there are a couple who are flag bearers, who are outspoken, who are authoring multiple books on the topic of religion. One of them is an individual by the name of Sam Harris. He's pretty young, very talented and bright. Of course, we don't agree with his opinions. It's interesting, this person put out a list to explain that this is my list of recommendations of books that every person should read, regardless of what field of study they are studying in. Brothers and sisters, number 4 on that list is what? Is the Qur'an. An atheist is telling us that you have to recite the Qur'an. And this is the part that really tore my heart apart. In the description, when he put the name of the Qur'an, in the description, he put this. He said, because the Qur'an is the best way you can learn about Islam. I don't care, brothers and sisters, how many majalis we're a part of, how many Islamic clips we watch online, how many, I don't know, inspirational quotes we read. The best way to keep ourselves in connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is reciting the Qur'an on a daily basis. Recite a salawat, please. Not only that, there's a point that we need to add here. When we go to the Qur'an, brothers and sisters, we have to be curious. You have to be curious when you go to the Qur'an. Don't just go through the verses as if you're reading a novel. No, you have to be curious. Why did he say it this way? How come this one doesn't match with the verse I was reciting yesterday? Nothing makes me happier, brothers and sisters, when someone comes up to me and says, Shaykh, this verse that I was reciting yesterday, it doesn't make sense to me. Could you please explain it to me? You have to go to the Qur'an with curiosity. Why? Because brothers and sisters, everything that we hear in our day-to-day lives, we are hearing from a human being that has the same feet as ours, that has the same eyes as ours, has the same limited vision as ours. But when it comes to the Qur'an, it's as if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala takes your hand and says, hey buddy, I see you struggling down there. Why don't you climb up here? See the world from a bird's eye view. See what's important. See what's happening. What's important. What's not so important. See, look at the things that I address, I talk about, I spend my time on, and the things that I don't really spend my time on. You can only get that view of the world when you are going to the Qur'an. I don't care who else you go to. They will not be able to give you that view because they are a human being just like you with the limited vision just like you. Recite a salawat, please. So when it comes to the second type of signs that we are trying to seek from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Ya Allah, am I supposed to go left or right? Istikhara has its place, no doubt. But if you have a deeper understanding of the Qur'an, most times, you will be able to figure out what you're supposed to do. Moving on to the third category. The third category of signs are signs that I'm trying to figure out on a scale of 1 to 10. Am I a 1, am I a 5, or am I a 7 in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? I have good news and I have bad news about these types of signs. The good news is that we don't have to go looking for weird signs to figure out if your iman is increasing or decreasing. If you're a good person or you're a bad person, you don't have to go looking for signs to figure that out. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has placed a very simple measuring stick in front of you and me. It's very simple. You delve into your day-to-day actions, into your own life, and you see, are you doing less haram compared to previous days, previous months? If the answer is yes, you are definitely becoming a better person by the seconds. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but don't doubt this. Sometimes you might make the right decision once, twice, three times. You might pass the test of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But deep down, you still feel like you don't have a special place in His eyes. No, you definitely do. If you are doing less haram compared to before, your iman is growing by the seconds. It's not about what feeling you get when you come into the majlis of Abu Abdullah. No, that will take a long time for you to develop. No, it's about the wajib and haram. So this was the good news. The bad news, however, is that this measuring stick is not too precise. Meaning what? Meaning that I can generally tell I'm better than Yazid because Yazid did a whole bunch of haram things that I didn't do. Hopefully you guys can make the same conclusion, right? I can conclude that. But can I figure out, am I a 6, am I a 7? Can I figure out if I'm better than the guy that's sitting beside me right now? Unfortunately, you cannot. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for 4 reasons, does not want you to figure that out. There's 4 reasons why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will not show us the result of our spirituality. You do all these good things, people look at you, you're the same old person that you were 5 minutes ago. 4 reasons. Number 1, the first reason why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not show us the result of our spirituality, brothers and sisters, is very simple. It's because we cannot keep it in. We cannot keep it hidden. If Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala shows you or me the smallest thing, the next day the whole world will know about it. Imagine, you're leaving the majlis, it's late at night, your car breaks down somewhere in the middle of nowhere. You call people, you can't get through to them. And then, just imagine, put yourself in this example. Imagine from far away, you see a good-looking Sayyid walking towards you. This Sayyid doesn't say anything. You're sitting in your car, he walks up to you, he puts his hand on the trunk of the car and disappears into thin air. You start your car is working now. I ask you this question. Is there any chance the next day when you come to the majlis, you won't go around and tell everybody about this experience that you just had? Of course not. Of course, you'll take to Facebook, you'll take to Twitter, you'll start a hashtag about it. Hashtag blessed, I saw Imam Zaman. We can't keep this stuff inside of us. We have not developed the capacity to keep this inside of us. This is why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't show us the result of our spirituality. Number 1. Number 2, sometimes when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala shows you and me the results of our spirituality, what happens is that that particular ability, that particular power that He has granted to us, that becomes the center of our life. And we totally forget why we were even given this ability to begin with. This is exactly what happened to one of the ulama of Bani Israel during the time of Musa alayhi salam. And this is a story that the Quran refers to. The Mufassirin, of course, have developed the details of the story. They're the ones that delve into the details of the story. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala refers to this in Surah Al-A'raf. One of the ulama of Bani Israel, his name was Bal'am ibn Ba'ura. We will call him Bal'am moving forward because it's a really long name and I won't be able to say Bal'am ibn Ba'ura every time. So we'll call him Bal'am for the purpose of brevity. Bal'am was one of the ulama of Bani Israel. He was one of the closest companions of Musa alayhi salam. In fact, Musa would choose Bal'am. He would send him out as a muballigh to go out there and spread the message of Musa alayhi salam. Bal'am had developed such faith that at one point Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala showed him the result of his spirituality. He gave him a power, an ability that he was mustajabu da'wah. anything that he prayed for, anything that he asked of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would grant it to him. And because he had the right sirat, he had the right lifestyle, he was a good person, he would only ask for things that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was naturally satisfied with. Days pass on, Musa alayhi salam has put together an army. This army is going to come and free the rest of Bani Israel that is still under the tyranny of the rulers at that time. Musa is coming with his army. The rulers of these villages, of the rest of Bani Israel, they were stuck, they didn't know what to do. They came to Bal'am, they said, Bal'am, you are mustajab al-da'wah. If you do dua, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will grant your dua. You just go and place a curse on the army of Musa. If you do this, we'll all be saved. At first, none of this made sense to Bal'am. He said, no, I'm a good person. That's why I became mustajab al-da'wah in the first place. I'm not going to go and set a curse on the army of Musa alayhi salam. So what did they do? They said, okay, Bal'am, don't worry about this. They went to his wife. They went to his wife. They gave his wife a gift. They say, you've been living with Bal'am. You can convince Bal'am to do this for us. So the wife comes to Bal'am and says, Bal'am, please just take care of this because of me. He says, well, I have to ask my Lord, see if he's okay with this. He sees a dream. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells him not to do this. Goes to his wife. He said, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told me in my dream not to do this. His wife says, well, ask him again. He goes back, has another dream. There's nothing in the dream this time. He comes, tells his wife. Wife says, well, if it was that much of a big deal for him, he would have told you not to do it again. But second time, he didn't tell you nothing. So it seems like it's not really a problem with him. Bal'am is tricked into going out and placing this curse on the army of Musa. He comes out, he wants to place this curse on the army of Musa. He has to go somewhere that he can see the army of Musa. He gets on his donkey. He wants to go up this hill. The donkey is not moving. As much as he hits this donkey, he whips the donkey to move. The donkey will not move. The donkey starts speaking to Bal'am. Bal'am, the angels won't let me move. They know what you want to do dua for. You were mustajab al-da'wah because you were asking for the right things, because you were a good servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has shown you, has given you this ability, you've changed paths. He's taking this ability away from you. Mal'am is stuck. He doesn't know what to do with the front. He says, well, at least if I can't place a curse upon them, then at least I can pray for these guys. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala takes away the control from the tongue of Bal'am. And instead of praying for these rulers and tyrants, he places a curse on these ruler and tyrants. See, brothers and sisters, when we end up seeing the results of our spirituality, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is kind enough to show us our spirituality, that strength, that power, that ability becomes the center of our life. We forget about everything else and we forget who gave it to us in the first place. Recite a salawat, please. The third reason, and inshallah we will end with this, the third reason why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not tell us exactly where we stand, he does not show us the results of our spirituality, is because sometimes he doesn't want you to enjoy this world too much. He wants to keep your rewards for the hereafter. This is a very interesting story that happened during the time of the sixth Imam, Imam al-Sadiq, salawatullahi alayhi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajil farajah. During the time of the sixth Imam enters the masjid, and the masjid back then was the center of every social event, every political event that was going to take place. It happened in the masjid. The sixth Imam enters the masjid. He sees everyone has gathered. They have made a crowd around one person. This one person has drawn a crowd to himself. The Imam comes in. He starts asking people, he says, what's going on here? They say, Ja'far ibn Muhammad, this guy, he has a special ability. He has been given a special strength. So what is this? They tell the Imam, they say, whatever you hold in your palm, in your fist, this individual will be able to tell you exactly what you're holding in your palm and in your fist. Now that's something that you usually hear about an Imam. No, this guy is an Indian mystic. He says, I have this ability. So people are gathered around him. They are testing this person. Then comes the turn of the sixth imam. The sixth imam approaches this individual. He holds his hand behind his back. He says, Ya Rajul, can you tell me what I'm holding behind my back? This person waits for a second. He looks at the imam for a second. He says, I know what you're holding in your hand. I just don't know how you got it. The imam says, it's fine. Don't worry about that part. Let me worry about that part. You explain to people what I'm holding in my hand. He says, Ja'far ibn Muhammad, I have an ability. My soul leaves my body. It goes and it checks the world. My soul left my body. I checked the world. Everything was in place. Everything was intact. There's just one thing that was missing. He says, tell them, what was it that was missing? He says, there was one thing that was missing. I checked the whole world. There was an island. In that island, there is a bird. That bird has a nest. In that nest, there used to be two eggs. One of them is missing right now. I know what you have in your hand. My question is, how did you get it? The sixth imam says, let me ask you something else. The sixth imam is not worried about telling people about his abilities. No, he's trying to teach you a lesson. He says, tell people how you attained this ability. What did you do to take on this strength? He says, it was simple. Whatever my ego wanted, whatever my desires wanted, I went against them. I wanted to sleep, I slept less. I wanted to eat, I ate less. I wanted to drink water, whatever the case may be, I drank less. I was given this ability. The imam says, well, now you have to become Muslim. He says, no, I don't want to become Muslim. I like doing this stuff, but I don't like becoming a Muslim. He says, well, you told me everything that your ego wanted, you went against it. You don't want to become Muslim. Your ego is telling you not to become Muslim. You have to become Muslim. This person embraces the religion of Islam. Now, usually this is where the story ends, all happy and nice and dandy. But usually when you become Muslim, things don't become easier. They become more meaningful. They become more deep. But they don't become easier. This person comes back after a couple days to the imam and says, Ja'far ibn Muhammad, what did you do to me? He says, what are you talking about? Tell the people what you're talking about. He says, since I became Muslim, I do not have that ability anymore. And then Ja'far ibn Muhammad tells him why this ability was taken away from him. And this is the key of the story, brothers and sisters. He says, yes, before you were Muslim, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted to give you the reward of all of your spirituality in this world. He wanted you to enjoy this world as much as you want. But now that you're Muslim, He is saving the reward for you for the hereafter. That is why now you don't have that ability anymore. Your life is dry and simple now. Because He's keeping it for you, He's reserving it for you for the hereafter. Inshallah, with that, we will bring tonight's talk to an end. Before we end, let us send our salams to our beloved Imam. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati hallat bifinaik. عليك مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار. ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين ورحمة الله وبركاته